Red 5. I'm going in.
Stay in attack formation.
Welcome to an episode of Trench Run Report. It has been a while, but we are back and we will be in full swing. I'm your host, Justin Gray, and here with me is...
Aaron Russo, standing by.
Sean McKinley, standing by.
And we've got a very special episode for you. It's been an episode that's been on my to-do list for Trench Run Report as far back as 2019. And we're gonna accomplish that today. We're gonna be talking about the man, the myth, the legend himself, the maestro of music, John Williams, and mostly focusing on the documentary that was released on Disney Plus called Music by John Williams. So. John Williams, for me, is someone that is kind of the person that makes movies what they are, mm-hmm. and like put musical scores into the forefront more so than predecessors like Elmer Bernstein, yeah. and among others, and also influence other. Composers as well, such as John Powell, maybe to some extent Hans Zimmer, and James Horner, all the works. What are your thoughts, Aaron?
Oh man, I mean, that. So Sean and I watched the documentary together, and. I mean, I don't know that there's... I love what... I was like kind of questioning, like, why is the Coldplay guy in there? Because like he was in there at the beginning, and I was kind of like, yeah. Why is he in there? But I think he said some things that really summarize for me. I think he said, what did he say? He said, John Williams is the biggest pop star on the planet. Like, mm-hmm. he's the most recognized musician in terms of his music being right. instantly recognizable. Yeah. To the most people on the planet.
Right.
And I think that's probably true.
Mm-hmm. Between the Star Wars theme and the Darth Vader theme, like that's instantly recognizable by billions of people.
I would say that between Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and Harry Potter, mm-hmm. those three clusters of music collectively would, by themselves,
right.
make him the most recognized. Like even though nobody knows what he looks like, and he's not...
I don't even know the name.
They may not.
That's the music from Star Wars, right?
Right.
And it's like he gets the credit.
He is the most. His music is more recognizable probably than any music on the planet.
Right.
I think that maybe the only exception might be the Beatles.
Right.
But even the Beatles might not be recognizable to a lot of people.
About, like, hey, name five like symphony orchestra composers. You'd be like. John Williams. That's all I got.
Right.
And who else? Right. He's like his own category
yeah.
of composers of classical music, as it were. Right. Which the documentary kind of got into that, like that the like soundtracks or like scores were it was considered like low class or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it was like music like the hoity-toity musicians and like
the composer music.
They have to like stoop to it. Like they consider it like oh you just gotta like go out and busk for coins. Right, to like earn your living so that you can play all this like avant-garde stuff that nobody wants to listen to.
Right.
So like you gotta like pay your dues playing pop music, quote unquote. And all like he got into a fight with like the Boston Pops, remember like when he went there? Like,
yeah.
They were clashing in the early 80s.
I think that was one of the things. So I feel like there's two different parts of the two different elements to the documentary, obviously. Like there's just purely the musical, you know. Just traveling down that road with him of like score after score after score and just seeing how that came to fruition and seeing how he progressed in his career musically. And then there's like more of like the story of him as a person. And I think that the two things that stuck out to me the most was I had no idea that he had been widowed.
Yeah, I didn't know that story. Yeah.
And that was really interesting in the sense that I feel like it even made me understand him even better in the sense of like, how does this guy make music that is so like emotionally relatable? Like it's just somehow he clearly taps into something that is transcendent. And the only reason I say that is because he's done it for so long that there's just clearly something different going on there. Mm-hmm. And part of it probably is related to his experiences in life.
Yeah.
And the ups and downs he's experienced. The other thing was the Boston Pops thing. Had no idea that that whole episode had happened where he was selected and then they basically like bullied him out.
Sounded like that.
And then he came back.
Pretty soon after that, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that was really interesting in terms of the fact that that was like you're saying, that was the point where he started to break down the barriers between truly classical music and film scores.
Yeah.
But I think that going back to a more personal perspective, like there's no musical talent, whether it's a band or an individual or anything. Like, before I watched that documentary, I knew already that I probably have listened to John Williams like hour for hour
more than
any other musical talent of any kind ever.
Right.
That's probably true for you too.
Oh, absolutely.
Like
all the games have that music as the background music. Like mm-hmm. on the 90s, you know, Jedi Knight 1 and 2, Jedi Academy.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
They use all of the stock music
from Battlegrounds.
Yeah, all that stuff is like background. They didn't like re-record any new scores.
Right.
They just used like, and it's usually like the like, quote unquote, background music from the movies that you don't like. If you listen to like the original Star Wars soundtrack, they have like the Inside the Death Star music where it's just kind of like ambient somewhat. Like that's the kind of stuff that would just play and it's just like in your head as an earworm mm-hmm. playing those games.
I think watching the documentary, I was like, it made me even more like I was just like, this guy's been in my ear for my whole life.
Well, like, it's through like this like hit of like, you know, like in the Olympics and then like this. And then
was
like,
it Sunday Night Football?
Yeah, I was like, what?
Like,
yeah, there's like things I'm like, he made that?
He did soundtracks to TV shows before
that
I didn't even know.
Island, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that was John Williams.
I knew about the Lost in Space, but Gilligan's Island kind of threw me off.
Right.
Like, when you look at the collective, and I didn't even think about that, like all the hours of playing video games with that music in the background mm-hmm. or even watching like other content that has Star Wars music in the background or documentaries or whatever, like it is for me personally, like he's the GOAT. Like he's the musician that defines my relationship with music more than any other person. And watching that documentary reaffirmed a lot of that in the musical sense of just like, there's no question. Like, I mean, Jesus, like it was just like, it's almost hard to believe that he could be that good and that popular for that long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's like, I guarantee you nobody like Bono won't be snucking out bangers when he's 92. Like, what is going on? This guy's 92, and he's still going. Like, and the longevity, the consistency, everything just reaffirmed that. On top of the fact that having all those insights into him as a person in terms of his character, his professionalism, his craftsmanship, like, everything about what I learned about him in that documentary just made it even more, like, an even deeper appreciation for what he's accomplished as a composer, but also just as a person. Mm-hmm. Like, to go through losing your spouse when your kids are young, to go through, you know, as a professional, I don't know that there could be anything like that experience of going to the Boston Pops and having the people. What was he said that one time when, like, they refused to play or they were doing something? Mm-hmm. Like, that is a, from a professional.
He's snubbed.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's a gut punch.
Right.
Like, that hurts. Like, the ego and, like, mm-hmm. your, you know, this is your passion, this is your life. And these people are, like, basically giving him the finger.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to come back from that, and to be honest, like, for him to be willing, like, a lot of people, even if they would have apologized to him, they still would have been like, hell no.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not coming back to you. You know.
Right.
And he was humble enough to come back and do that. And I just think that all of that collectively just, I don't know that, you know, between his professional accomplishments, his personal story and his personal accomplishments, like, I just love him even more. And it just makes me appreciate everything about him and his music even more. And I don't know that, I think what I also enjoyed, I think we talked about this a little bit when we were watching it, was that, like, even though he's involved with only one very specific part of filmmaking, I think you could make the argument that, I think it would not be a stretch to state, because people say, well, oh, like, you know, he got lucky because, what did he say? He said, luckiest day of my life was the day I met Steven Spielberg, you know? But I think you can make the argument that the luckiest day of George Lucas and Steven Spielberg's life was the day they met John Williams. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, you could almost make an argument,
really,
like,
knit the movie together.
Who, like, would those movies have been as popular without John Williams' score? Would John Williams' scores, like, there is something very symbiotic about,
yeah,
the synergy between Spielberg, Lucas, and Williams. And I think you can make the argument that in many ways he's as great of a pioneer in his own way to those people, to, like, Spielberg and Lucas, who granted they have more diversity of skill and, like, mm-hmm. to be a director, producer, you know, writer. These guys are doing a lot of different things at the same time. But, man, I don't know. I don't know, like, I think George Lucas even said in the documentary, didn't he even say, like, oh, Star Wars wouldn't have been Star Wars without...
Yeah.
Like, it might... I mean, we'll never know.
Yeah.
Right? But,
well,
like...
just try watching. If you... like, they have clips or whatever, like...
where there's no music.
It, take the music out. It's so bad.
Or what if they had just decided... what if they had caved into the pressure and done a contemporary soundtrack?
Yeah.
Would the movie have been...
or even just the classics, like, stick... like, they had Holst the Planets going as the placeholder. And that kind of works. Because, like... Williams was inspired by that for sure,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, but it's not quite the same. But yeah, like a contemporary, like if it was like Planet of the Apes music,
if it was like disco music,
yeah,
or something,
yeah,
or like,
it would, like,
technological,
right,
like
too, yeah, too synthy or whatever.
Like, I really do
like
think
the holiday special.
I really
right.
do think yeah. that part of the magic of it, of his music, is that there is a degree to which when you're watching the documentary that you're like, he might be the reason those movies were successful,
mm-hmm.
or at least that they were as successful as they were.
Yeah.
Would they have been as successful if a different person had created a score? I mean, probably. He's not the only talented person.
Right.
But damned if that isn't
right.
an argument you could make. And I think they even said in the documentary, like, it's almost like the scores are almost like characters in the movie.
Yeah.
And they're always going to be up for best actor or best supporting actor. Like, they are always critical to, you know, like, it would probably be very hard for me to keep repeatedly watching Star Wars with no music, but I can listen to the music without the movie
yeah.
for years.
Yeah.
So there is, I don't know if it's still on Disney Plus, but there is a version of The Last Jedi that's nothing but the John Williams score.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's like
what?
Yeah. I haven't watched it, but I've seen that that was there, and I was like, that's kind of interesting. Like, it's like a silent movie.
Wait, on Disney Plus?
Yeah, well, it's like a silent movie take of it. It's in the like extras, I think, for Last Jedi. It's like under the extras, I think.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And I think it might be on like the Blu-ray 4K stuff.
So it's like an artsy, like silent movie kind of thing, where it's like impressionistic. It's like visual.
You and see music.
There's no sound effects. It's just
no sound effects. No dialogue. And then, it's just the music.
And then music.
No sound effects.
And music tells the story. Because The Last Jedi is the best, in my opinion, the best sequel trilogy soundtrack. It has the best one.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it has more. Like it's outside of the over reliance on the Force theme. I would say, yeah, I would agree. John definitely had like a little more playroom to.
Right.
Like with Canto Bight, the Roses theme, Crate, everything that goes on in Crate, that hyperspace thing, like the Holdo maneuver scene where that's
right.
Like the build up for that was just like worth
it's basically alone. Like a really long music video of the album.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is something that. I could watch.
Yeah, right.
And
it's
probably
like the best way to watch Last Jedi, right?
Right, like, and I think that speaks to, like, I don't even know, like, that element of like number one that like the music, is what brings the emotions, out,
mm-hmm.
of the like the performances or the scenes. Like, it's the music that elevates or like magnifies the emotional impact, and. I even like for me, like working at Best Buy and like doing a lot of sales in home theater, and the companies have done the research and they're like, the impact of your viewing experience with a movie at home is like 80% sound and 20% visual.
Yeah.
It's like the sound and the music
are
the experience.
Crappy. It really ruins it.
Yeah.
Obviously like you have a slash in your TV or like half of it's broken or like.
That's
but like,
yeah, but like
you have a clear picture.
But like, if you're watching the best movie you've ever seen, your all time favorite movie, and you can barely hear it,
right?
Or like
it was like
it's
that
small,
joke with like when Oppenheimer came out, it's like watching Oppenheimer the way it was meant to. It was like it's like portable DVD player. It's like overwrought.
But I think that what the documentary I think did a really good job of doing was showing how frequently. It was his contribution to the overall creative process of the movie,
mm-hmm.
that made it the hit that it was. Like,
and it's wild that like it comes in like I think he like so Star Wars came out in like May of 77, and I think they said that he like scored it starting in like January. I think he was working on some like.
I think they said he was working on it, and they made some changes maybe even after the movie came out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But like, and then all the other movies like he'd say like. Like Spielberg was like he'd go shoot the movie and then like he would have like downtime, like his downtime of like they just do this grueling shoot and then he'd spend like 3 weeks like watching the scoring happening, that like they're watching the recording of the scoring.
Yeah,
he'd have like time off in like April or whatever for a movie that's coming out in the summer, right? So like it's just like it happens late in the process. It's like a post-production task, but obviously like John Williams is like starting like sketching out, like he said, he wakes up every morning, he like writes something, he writes music every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's probably the like, secret sauce, honestly. Like,
mm-hmm.
But like,
that he's just always
right. But like, he
creative.
Sits down with like Spielberg, he's like, oh, I need a theme, like, or Lucas, like, we have this new character, Rey, we need a Rey's theme. Like, and then he like tinker with, like, well, here's 30 ideas, or like 30 little motifs I came up with. And it's like, well, I like number 16 and number 23. Like, can you mash those together? Or like, here's a variant of the, like, and they just like, okay, and like you had to write out 30 different little motifs for him to go, I like this one, and then you like build around that, and like just the process of like coming up with music, most of which gets discarded as like a first draft or whatever, and you're like finding and honing the thing. It's like you got the block of marble, right, and like the Statue of David is in there somewhere, and you just gotta like let it get out. Like that's the art, the amazing art gift part of it.
Yeah, that's the part that when I was watching and they were describing how he still handwrites it all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what his process is.
But I think
is.
That's the secret sauce. I think, like, the slow, deliberate pace of that, like, it couldn't happen, like, digitally. You couldn't just sit there and bang out on GarageBand all day long. Like, it's almost too frantic. for anything to really, like, it needs to kind of sit and, like, resonate, and, like, you need to, like, take the time to, like,
I think I said when we were watching it, I think I said something like, this is, like, the biggest advertisement against AI.
Yeah, right,
like,
yeah.
I've ever seen, like, now I would be like, you want to replace that with a computer generated, like.
But AI is just, like, a really fast copy machine. Like, it's not generating unique, like, out of nothing content. It's, like, just remixing everything that came before, which you could argue humans are doing the same thing. But, like, humans have, like, a spark of inspiration on their
own. I think it's like, for me, knowing, like, for me, like, there's always, like, I can watch a movie and be like, oh, that was, I really didn't like that, or it was very mid or really bad. And then I'll watch the behind the scenes. Then I'm like, I don't dislike it as much anymore. Simply because I know about the human creativity behind it.
A statement in a piece of art where they, like, write out their paragraph or whatever, and you're like, oh, okay.
I remember the example that I don't remember what the name of the movie was, but it was one of those
Claymate. Furious number four.
It was one of those
Wallace and Gromit?
Stop motion.
Yeah.
Where, like, they move the thing, like, a millimeter, take a picture.
Like Nightmare Before Christmas or something?
Something.
Like,
I think it was, like,
Coraline.
It wasn't Coraline. It was, like, it was kind of like a spooky movie. Yeah. Kid.
Oh, Kubo and the Two Strings or Paranorman?
Mm-hmm. Paranorman, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that movie and I was like, so that was, like right. Clearly, like, a 6 out of 10. And then I watched the behind the scenes.
Like, how you do that.
Yeah. And I was like, jaw drop,
like years to make it.
Like, I can't wrap my head around how someone came to work every day for days on end, hour after hour, like, going, okay, move it that much, snap.
That's
move it
the that Empire Strikes Back, the entire, like Hoth battle.
How,
like,
the
months of, like, having that walker, like, walking with stop motion.
That's insane. Crazy.
Yeah,
it's insane. And when you watch that, there's no way you can look at that and then go, that and not sucks. Have it change
yeah, right.
your perspective yeah. on the energy and effort.
Right.
And I think that that's the piece that AI or technology, it can't replace
right.
that. It might not all, it's going to, it might be able to create something that's
passable.
Yeah. Or that you might
right.
even enjoy, or you might be tricked into thinking it came from a person. But.
Cause I've heard that, like, I saw something that, like, there's been recently, like, mass layoffs in, like TV production, like local news production. With, like, meteorologists and, like, producers, because, like, the AI tools are such that, like, they can, like, generate, script, record, edit, do B-roll. Like, they can produce
a whole news
thing in, like, in a few hours, which would take a few days or whatever.
Right.
And, like, it gets you, like, an 80% of the way there first draft, basically. And then, like, the human can, like, take it from there.
Yeah.
Like, you can have, like, a workable first draft of a script, of, like, a shootable script of a movie. Idea off of a
and
prompt.
Then fine tune it.
And then, like, that would be your first 4 months hunkered in a bunker somewhere to, like, come up with your first draft of your script. Like, it can just do that, like, in a few minutes, and then you just, like, run with it there. But it's, like, maybe, like, the process of you grinding through it for 4 months, like,
is
what
part of what creates
to, like, yeah,
yeah.
Like, then you'll, like, remember something from that time.
Yeah.
But, like, the only way in, you know, the only way through is around is through, right? So, like, I wonder, like, what are we losing by, like, shortcutting it like this? Like, I'm going to speed run this movie. And it's like, well, then you end up with AI slot.
Well, even by the standards of technological use 20 or 30 years ago, he's behind the curve. Like,
mm-hmm.
like I mean, he, like, he handwrites everything.
Yeah.
He doesn't even use a computer.
I mean, somebody has to, like, take that handwritten script, like, thing and then go, like, make it so that the entire orchestra, like, has copies of it, so, like,
well, they
I don't
print
think,
it
do they photocopy his handwriting, or does someone take that and make, like, a master copy
and then,
like,
produce
the,
it,
you know?
Yeah, I
like,
think that's probably what happens.
But, like, what if his handwriting is bad, or, like, what if, like, you know, I mean, like, that's slow, right? It's, like, slow and prone
it's
to
incredibly
error
slow
versus, like, Ludwig Lorenzen, or the guy who does
Ludwig Göransson.
Yeah, like, he's like the next gen, like the next generation of all this, and he's, like, all digital, whatever, like, all these, like, he's all over.
He's using all the technological
yeah.
tools.
And it works, like, for him. Like, he's all over the place. His stuff is everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and
he's perhaps
and,
the next George Lucas.
And
like,
he's talented.
Yeah.
Like, right. his music's really good.
Yeah.
But
but it's like a different, he's a different medium in a sense, right?
Yeah, it's like,
but he went through, the thing is, he went through, like, we haven't yet had a generation, they're currently, like, you know, teenagers-ish, like kids don't know how to, like, write, they don't know how to, like, hand write, like, a test or whatever, right? They've just been on a Chromebook their whole school life, right? So it's like, we're soon going to have, like, a generation of the workforce,
yeah,
let's say.
Yeah, they won't.
Who, like, doesn't know how to do analog anything because they've only done digital, like,
well, you heard about
stuff.
What was the thing where, like, they were having trouble during the election because teenagers didn't know how to sign their name and they couldn't verify signatures?
Like, I mean, I kind of go out of my way to, like, have my kids, like, use the keyboard on our, like, computer, like,
mm-hmm.
Type things because, like, they don't have, like, iPads, but, like, if it's all thumbs and, like, iPad typing, like, if it's just thumb typing or scrolling, like, you gotta learn how to, like, type.
Do you sound like
an old guy, like, you need to learn how to typewriter or cursive, but it's like, I feel like you have to know how to use a keyboard and a mouse, right? But, like, they don't have, like, at school, they just have Chromebooks or whatever. Like, they have trackpads and, like, laptop keyboards, but not, like, real keyboards, you know what I mean? That's not like an old boomer, right? Real keyboards back in my day, you know? But, like, I just wanted, like, but the process of, like, going through the analog training, as it were, so, like, you are a classically trained musician who now, because you've put in 20 years of prep from age 6 to age 26, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the way through, you can now, like, you're on the summit and you can, like, flourish. But, like, is there a shortcut to that, right? Or, like, if technology enables you to, like, fast run or speed run up to that point, like, you've lost something along the way, haven't you? You know what I mean?
Somewhat.
You have to be seen. I just wonder, like, if all these, like, speed run kids are all gonna, like, hit a wall or, like, you know, hit, like, writer's block, right? Like, because they don't have, like, the legwork, as it were, up to that point.
Well, I mean, it can come down to a very simple thing of, like if the only thing you need to do to create music is type in a few prompts and hit go, there's nothing creative about that.
Right, you're just like a programmer. You're not like an artist.
You're just a button pusher,
a
or prompter.
Yeah. Like a technician and an artist are different things. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I think, were you going to say something? You were going to say something.
So, I did have a music education growing up.
Oh.
I played violin at a very young age, but I was just glad that didn't work out. I also did trumpet in middle school and then transferred over to French horn through middle school and high school. And then I was able to play a little bit afterwards, right? And I do personally own an accordion.
Wow.
That I just play around with.
I heard that's like one of the hardest ones to learn.
Oh, yeah, it is.
There's like four things going on at once.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think I actually do remember having a, I don't remember if it was jazz band or a regular band, but there was a time where we had to write our own music.
Oh.
But the cool thing was we didn't have to transfer over, like, treble clef or bass clef. I've mostly gone my whole life with a treble clef,
mm-hmm.
So. But, yeah, I feel like if you know your scales and if you know your notes and if you know what a quarter note is as opposed to a triple, then the music sheets your playground to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's obviously going to be notes that will clash against each other, like a minor or,
mm-hmm.
or major. But
yeah, there's like rules, but like once you learn the rules, there, like, it's like a constrained playground,
mm-hmm.
right? But like, yeah, and it just doesn't sound good if you break the rules. So like, as long as it sounds good, you're working with fire, you know. And like, when you really drill it down to it, like they say, like 97% of like top 100 hits or whatever, when you like
sounds
it, it's like all
the
same
chords,
right? And
yeah.
It's like the same keys, like same ranges. Like there's like this, like, we're all trained to have like this formulaic pop hit, right? If you can like grow it in a lab, it's all the same, really. It's just
mm-hmm.
different arrangements of the same four notes, right? what is it, the 4-5-6-1 or whatever, mm-hmm. like chord progression. It's like all the Beatles music, all Taylor Swift, all everything. It's like all bro countries, all the same, right? You know what I mean? Like, I did clarinet and then bass clarinet from sixth grade all the way through high school.
Mm-hmm.
And did jazz band, did symphony orchestra was the best, like in senior year, because they combined the strings and the brass, and we did like the legit scores to things. Like we did like the Gladiator songs, like all the Gladiator soundtrack stuff, the Pirates of the Caribbean,
okay.
and did like a John Williams suite, I remember, and it had, and like we did the Lord of the Rings too, when that came out. Like it was right at the time it came out, like, so it was like right in that 2002-2003 period. It's perfect. But like it's so fun to be like a part of a giant orchestra, right? You have your part, but like you're like sitting there and like behind you is the tuba, right, doing their part, right, and in front of you you can see the violins doing their thing. It's like, it's just like you're like part of this organic thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool to like be in an orchestra. I had never been in a choir, but I imagine it's similar to that, where like your voice is joined with everyone else, and it's just like magic's happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I never wrote anything on my own, but like we used to do like in band competitions, you'd have like you'd have your prepared piece that you do, and then you have the segment where you like go in and you have like the envelopes that are sealed, and then you have like 10 minutes you can open it up, and like you have this piece of music you've never seen before, and you have like 10 minutes to prep it as a group, and then you have like 5 minutes to like rehearse pieces of it or something, and then,
you just
have to play it, and then
mm-hmm.
you can judge like on sight reading basically. So you have to like be fluent in like reading. So you have to like read. I could used to be able to, I probably couldn't anymore, but like you look at a piece of music and like sing it in your head, like you're like, you know, you're like reading it like Braille almost, like it's, you can like hear it in your head just looking at the notes. It's like wild, like music notation is wild. You have to look at the key, right, like how many sharps are on it, whatever, and
yeah,
like,
that
like, mark it
that
all
always
right
screwed
way.
Me
yeah, because you always like miss, like, oh, it's just listed as A, but like you gotta raise the A all the time, like every time you see A you gotta put a sharp on it, and it's like, why don't they just put that there as it is? But no, everything's in Italian, like all of the little notes, it's all like, you know, fortissimo and
mm-hmm.
forte, and it's all like Italian for some reason.
So I think, like, see what I think what this is probably a part of the conversation that could go too far in a rabbit hole, but like I do think that based on what you guys are saying, like I think part of what the documentary raised the question of, it even though I don't think it was really trying to raise the question, it is raising a question about, like, so I mean there's two things that were kind of running through my head, especially as we got close to the end of the documentary. Number one is just like, like we're coming to the end of an era.
I was thinking that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like John Williams is going to be dead, and we're going to be listening to his music for probably hundreds of years after he's dead. But there won't be any new music. Is he the last
mm-hmm.
truly legendary human composer?
Right.
No, I firmly believe that there will be. I mean, he'll be, like, among the
pantheon, yeah.
Great composers, like, right up there with Beethoven, Mozart, Tchaikovsky, all those.
Certainly, like, in the 20th century pantheon.
Yeah.
Like with Holst and Dvorak and all those.
Mm-hmm.
Bernstein and all those. Leonard Bernstein.
So.
But the question of, like, Even if humans continue to be the primary, no pun intended, instrument of,
mm-hmm.
like, will anybody ever reach the heights of longevity and consistency and recognizability and quality? Can that happen again? In the new context of all the digital tools and all the AI and all the...
Like, I think, like, 1,000 years ago, it was, like, the lute and the lyre would be, like, the king's gesture music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that all that's, like, faded away. Like, nobody plays that stuff anymore. And it transitioned to, like, you know... And there was, like, the Baroque period, which was, like, the harpsichord as, like, the precursor to the piano. But, like, basically by 1700-ish, like, all the instruments that were, like, in use at that time... that has carried through for 300 years. Like, the symphony orchestra that you record Star Wars on, all those instruments, none of them are new instruments. Like, they're all 300 years old instruments, more or less. It's very little innovation in, like, the composition of what a symphony orchestra is. As far as, like,
what kind of sounds you can create with it.
Is, like, is solidified for hundreds of years. And, like, so it's, like, how much longer is it going to go? And, like, is it going to be, like, upgraded, right? That kind of came up with, like, that Dune prophecy, right? Where they go to, like, the nightclub and it's, like,
right.
This is, like, 10,000 years in the future. Like, why is all the nightclub music the same?
Right.
It's because, like, and Expanse tried to do that. Like, Expanse tried to do, like, what does 300 years in the future music sound like?
Right.
And they kind of did it a little bit, but, like, it's just impossible to, like, extrapolate. Like, how could Bach, right, in 1704 or whatever, have possibly gone, like, oh, I'm going to do, like, shake it off. Like, he would have never been able to come up with that. You know what I mean? Like, because that's 300 years from his time. You just can't, like, you have to have so many steps of musical evolution to get to, like, hip-hop even, right? Like, you couldn't have come up with, like, Crip Walk, right? Bach's not gonna come up with that.
Right.
It takes, like, organic development. So, like, it's hard to imagine, like, how it's gonna unfold, but, like, the digital piece is the new.
Well, I think,
is it gonna accelerate it, right?
I think, like, well, that's what I'm, that's
music,
the reason that, you know? I think that's such an, like, that, the reason that came to the forefront for me near the end of the movie was that if you think about big history in any context, music, politics, it doesn't matter. If you think big history, we are in a period of such rapid acceleration in changes to technology that affect everything, that's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Like, given that reality, what are the chances that someone's going to come along and do things the way John Williams does it for that long a period of time?
Yeah.
With that kind of consistency, with really, really as an anachronism,
right,
as someone who's functioning out of time, like, it already is already, as I was watching that, it already felt like his time had passed.
Yeah, because, like, even just the economics of, like, can you imagine, like, how much money it takes to have, like, a 90-person symphony orchestra, like, operating year-round?
Right.
Like, that's so many salaries and operation costs, and, like, you got to have a big enough audience paying for that to make that work. Right? And, like, at some point, like, the like, symphony-going audience has degenerated into TikTok, like, content. And, like, who can sit, like, already, like, opera
just
dead, right? Opera 100 years ago was the height of, like, cultural, like, prominence.
Entertainment.
And, like, now it's, like, not nearly what it was because it's, like, a whole production, right? Like, just the economics aren't there. Like,
well, I think that
there's
that's
no money in it.
Is, I guess, you know? So the question becomes, like, there's two things about that. Number one is, like, are we going to get to the point where, like, we're going to be like, oh, my favorite AI composer, which isn't just a composer. It's literally like a program,
right,
that composes the music, produces the music,
right,
plays the music, generates, like, the sounds.
Like, it's one thing to have,
like,
a good composer, but, like, John Williams had the London Symphony Orchestra at his disposal to pull this off.
Yeah.
Like, what's the pipeline for someone like, oh, my career path is to be a professional, like, oboe player. Like, you got to go to major markets.
What if there's
right
a computer
now
that can,
like,
do all the parts of the orchestra
right
instantly and sound real?
But they're just harvesting, like, previously recorded human stuff. Like, that's what I mean. Like, they're just a big fax machine or copy machine, right? I mean,
right, but that's so cheap.
I know, but, like, we're losing,
a lot of,
like, the soul of it. Right?
I know.
There's no human behind it. It's like,
that's what I'm saying. Like,
it's
when
like
I was,
it's like a grotesque copy of something, right?
But if,
that
but
was,
is it? If everybody
like
gets, if everybody adjusts down to that, and then everybody's used to that,
that's sad. Yeah, that's a loss. It's just like, yeah, if you, like, photocopy the Mona Lisa, it's like, yeah, you've preserved the Mona Lisa, quote unquote. It's like not the same one, right? But then again,
right,
if you can, like, copy it, that's like you can't tell the difference. I guess, like, then.
So
we're
to what
that,
I guess my so my point my point
test, right,
in saying some of this is to say, like, is our reaction right now, is that just going to be like 20 years from now, we're like, oh, those people, you know, like, are we just like old people, like, raging against the
screaming at clouds,
or are we actually, like, watching the end of something that? Because I really did feel like there was points when I was watching that documentary where just seeing how old Spielberg is and how old George Lucas is and how old John Williams is, and like, it's over.
Who's the next Spielberg?
Who's the next Spielberg? Who's the next George Lucas? Who's the next John Williams? Will there even be? Will we even? Is that even a conversation that we would even have? Like, if that's what I'm saying. Like, will there ever be like the next John Williams, whoever that is, if that ever happens? It's almost impossible that they will be. That they will function in the same. The context will be so different that. Like, even like Hans Zimmer and Ludwig Göransson, they really do a lot of things very differently from John Williams.
Yeah. Or like Michael Giacchino, I'm thinking, to me, he had the best, he did the best of the non-John Williams, like, scores for Rogue One, I thought. Because, like, Solo is, like, I can't even remember anything about Solo.
Yeah.
Music.
Solo's
like,
pretty good.
I can think of, like, Krennic's theme, and I can think of, like a lot of the themes from Rogue One. I'm like, yeah, but that's Michael Giacchino. Like, he's already an established... Again, he, like, came up through the system, as it were.
Yeah.
So he's, like he's in the same, like, gene pool as all this. But, like... And then Ludwig did, like, the Mandalorian songs and soundtrack is awesome. But, like, it's coming at it from a totally different angle. And, like, that is, like, maybe there is something there. Like, but again, he's, like... He's classically trained, but he also, like, pulls in, like, every world instrument possible. So he's, like, drawing from the widest net. He's not, like... I'm constraining myself to a classical symphony orchestra. He's like, I'm going to pull in all these weird, like, world music flutes and, like, horns and, like, didgeridoos.
With the technology.
And then he, like, let's get it, like, I'll sample the didgeridoo into the thing and then, like, run it backwards. Or, like, he just, like, plays with it all.
Right.
And, like, that's cool. And, like, that's perhaps the future is, like, this blend of, like...
I think it definitely
human
is.
Human ingenuity with the know-how. Then, like, the tool is the tool. And, like, the tool isn't the thing. Like, it's the means and the end, right? You're mixing up, like... The point isn't that the program makes the music. It's like the program, like, is
a,
like,
tool for the composer.
Of the composer.
Yeah.
Like, it's different tools that the composer is using with her hands, as it were. That's, I think, that's at least the bridge to the next thing, if not, like, this is the way of the future, right? It's like this.
So here's another element of it that I want to introduce that I think I uniquely have as an old person. And it came up, and it came up in the movie, and I'm curious to hear what your guys' take on it is. Because there was that moment when J.J. Abrams was talking about, and I don't know that I've ever heard someone that far removed from what would be, I'm not J.J. Abrams, but, like, there was things he was saying that I was like, oh my gosh, like, that is, I know exactly what he's talking about. And it was when he was pointing out, like, So in the movie, he talks about, like, how when Star Wars came out, I think he specifically used that example, when the first Star Wars came out, there was no other way to experience it through the soundtrack. And I literally remember.
He'd sit there reading the notes and, like,
he would just sit, there was, I have it downstairs. I would put the vinyl on. And play the soundtrack over and over and over again and stare at the same, like, 12 pictures.
Yeah. That was me with the Attack of the Clones soundtrack.
Really?
So, yeah. I would listen to that one just constantly.
And just look at images.
It's my favorite of them all.
And so, and his point was that was the only way you could kind of relive the experience of watching the movie. Well, clearly... Now, that is completely not the case. If I want to relive the experience of watching the movie, I can just watch it again on demand as much as I want.
Right. And even if you have the album, it's like it's on your phone digitally, and you, like, you pay your $10 a month for Apple Music, and, like, you have access to the world's entire music. And, like, you're not sitting there, like, you're not on your phone watching anything while you're listening.
No, it's playing,
like,
in the background,
like,
or it's in
the
car.
The ritual, of, like, let's read the liner notes, and, like, right now I'm listening to an album.
And that's
most
all I'm
do
doing.
It, right. Most people just, like, have it on
while
I'm doing whatever else or doing laundry or whatever. That's fine, too. But, like, album
it's
listening
fine.
As a pastime is, like, dead, right? Nobody's, like, sitting there listening.
And in the context of movie making and music, right? If we no longer, like, back then in the 70s and early 80s, that was my lifeline. I had no other, like, way to get pulled back in to the content. Now, that's not the case at all, because the content itself is so readily available that I feel like to some degree it is going to take away from, right? Like, how important is the music if I can get the full course meal every time I want to hear the music? Yeah, like,
that's true.
I think that's, and maybe that's what you're saying. Like, are we moving into an era where no one's going to listen to a whole soundtrack? Like, who's going to do that? Who's going to sit there and just play the whole soundtrack of a movie? I do too.
There's a lot more money in printing and shipping physical copies of a vinyl album
than just
like
putting a.
Then, like, the digital, like, oh, you get like 0.0001 cents per stream, but only if you hit a certain number of streams per month or whatever. Like, the model, the entire, like, streaming model, both, like, for music podcasts and for, like,
video content.
The entire, like, Hollywood, like, broke itself by, like, going all in on the streaming model, and, like, they've decimated themselves. Like, the whole business model is broken, for TV at least, right? Like, it used to be, like, advertiser-supported media, everyone compete for desired time slots, and people would go show up on Wednesday night at 8, or Thursday night at 8 was the big comedy, like, block, right? You have 8, 8:30, and 9, and 9:30, and then the local news, like, it was a ritual. People would, like, oh, it's 8 o'clock, time for watching shows. Like, Friday night is MASH, remember, and Sunday night is the prestige, whatever prestige show is on Sunday night, right? And like,
right.
And you just like,
you, and if you it, missed
and,
it,
and you missed it, and like,
you had to wait for the reruns during,
like,
the summer.
They had eyeballs, they could like sell advertising for it, and like, you have ad breaks, there's a ritual that's when you go to the bathroom, you like make your popcorn, like, there's a whole thing. Like, we like lost the magic of like, you can watch anything anytime you want, and like, that sounds great, and like, actually, that kind of sucks because I spend most of my time just trying to find something to watch. I don't even know what I want.
Right? Well, I think that if you use that as an example, like in the context of what we're talking about, like if I had been born in 2000 instead of 1970,
yeah,
and Star Wars came out in 2005,
mm-hmm.
would I have as strong of a connection to the music if I hadn't spent decades where that was my only connection?
I think if you were already like a musical person, probably, maybe.
But otherwise, no.
In like the band world.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I don't think like the average.
Because I, and that's why I, that's why I'm curious. Like, you guys have.
Yeah.
Like, when I was 7 years old in 1977, when the movie comes out, right, there's no home video, there's no streaming, there's nothing.
Yeah.
It was either still images and music.
Right.
And so I spent years of my life primarily listening to the music
and remembering
Yeah. and imprinting that mm-hmm. music on me without the moving image.
Mm-hmm. Which is an ancient way, like that's the ancient like oral storytelling slash like just the music, like the tribal music. Like reinforces the stories of the constellations, whatever. Like,
and I think what part of what reinforces tribal, it is like, that it's so, like, the scarcity.
Yeah.
Of
right,
the experience.
Scarcity actually
of the, yes.
forces creativity and like it's like.
Human, well, it also human it for, I think it forces you to receive
yeah.
it differently.
Yes. Yeah.
And so my question to you guys would be, even though like it's not like I'm
mm-hmm.
ancient here, but like both of you were not alive at all during any of that, right? So like
okay.
to some degree, like from, I mean, like
yeah.
you're older than Justin,
barely,
like
yeah.
but like even when you were a kid, like video rental, you know,
yeah.
everything was largely readily
but it
available.
Was still in the same era. Like there was an era change with like Netflix streaming, let's say like 2013
mm-hmm.
House of Cards, let's say, was turn the page on like a new era. So like even in the 90s it was like we go on Friday night to Blockbuster and it's a ritual to like walk around and like what do we want, oh they don't have that this time, like oh shoot we gotta check next time, like right,
mm-hmm.
we wanted to
or
watch
reserve
we came
it.
To watch Speed and Speed is taken out because the two copies are out, so what are we gonna settle on? Like, oh, and then we fight, oh no this, no that, no this, and it's like you've got your one thing and like oh but I got an A on my report card, oh you get a video game this week because you got like
right.
You bring your report card to Family Video and you get free rentals. They're like, oh, sweet. And it's like, oh, but you get 3 days with your video game, right? Like, you don't have a long time with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just like Xbox Game Pass. Like, I have access to every Xbox game ever made. And you're like, I don't
right.
play any of it. And everything sucks. Like, I don't have any fun with it anymore. Like, when it was like, I earned this, or like, ah, I only have so much time to play this, I better get it in. Like, it like created.
So I think that alone answers my question, which is that if I didn't have, if I didn't grow up with the limitations of the 70s and 80s, I don't think that the music would live in me the way it does.
Right.
Mm. Because
I agree.
Right. I spent so many years.
You let it brainwash you, literally.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I literally. Your brain in that it. Was how I watched the movie again.
For sure, Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't watch it again. And I would just listen to the music and look at the pictures.
And I did because I liked. I was like a music geek, so I liked it. Yeah. But, like, it's weird. Like, when I like say, oh, I love listening to soundtracks, I was like, they just like listen to the radio, or like they just like whatever, or listen to pop, whatever. And they're like, soundtracks, I can never, that's too boring.
Well,
dude, that's where the good stuff
like,
is.
When people, when I was at the gym the other day, like in my class, and like they play music during the, you know, and like after class they were like, something somehow came up like, what's your favorite song or what music do you listen to? And I'm like, soundtracks?
Yeah.
And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Like nobody gave that answer. So then one of the coaches after, like, after as the class was ending was like, oh, soundtracks, huh? And so then like they found a playlist on Spotify and started playing soundtracks. I'm like, do you know this one? And I started rattling them off.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah.
one of them was randomly Book of Boba Fett. And I was like, oh, that's Book of Boba Fett. And they're like, what the fuck? How do you fucking know that? Like, who knows that, right? Like,
so, kind of almost listen to the soundtrack daily to an extent.
I've gotten to a point where
if you randomly play any part or any from any of the Star Wars movies, mostly one through nine, I'd be able to tell you which episode it came from, what part it is, and if I'm feeling like getting a bonus point, I'll even tell the name of the track.
But, like, for me, it's different because, like, I literally, like, I went into the Star Wars, Dark Forces 2, Jedi Knight, like, game files that I had, you know, I installed from the game disc. I'm like, I went and found, like, they have, like, the music files that play. Like, I went and found it, like, and it's, like, 30 of the tracks or whatever, or it's, like, pieces of the original soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I ripped that onto a CD. My parents probably still have it at my house, at their house. Like, that, like, I made my own, like, Star Wars soundtrack. But I didn't, like, it's just, like, Untitled 1, Untitled 2, like, they didn't have names.
Oh,
it's just, like, I just
okay.
know that, I know the songs, but I don't know, like, what they're called. And it wasn't until, like, later when I went back and, like, actually listened to the real, like, soundtrack albums. And I'm like, oh, now I see, like, the name of this track, and, like, where the sound, like, the original was just, like, this mixtape, in a sense, right?
Huh.
Like, the game made a mixtape for me, as it were. And that's how I, like, that was, like, my original trilogy soundtrack mix was from Jedi Knight 2 game files. Like, I went and hunted for them. It's like, because kids our age, maybe your age, my age, but not younger, we're like way more adept at like computer stuff with that. Like, we know how to like install discs and like go into the D drive, like C drive, and like dig around for files and whatnot.
Right.
And like, everything's like, now it's just like, oh, I'm just going to stream this off the cloud or just Chromebook everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But like, back in my day, we made our own PCs and like, we used Linux or whatever, right?
Speaking of,
I didn't know the names of any of these tracks or like which exactly movie they were from, unless I remember from watching it. Right, but like, I just had like this like 30 track, like random mixtape. But then the first like real album I got was the Episode 2 Clone, the Attack of the Clones, like actual CD.
Oh, okay.
That and then I would listen to that one on my portable CD player, right, all day long at school or whatever.
Well, I mean, that was that for me, going back into the 70s and 80s. The only thing you could do, that, the only like, going to the record store. Was my version of that. And it was the only thing you could get your hands on or your eyes and ears on that could put you back in touch with something that you couldn't get access to. And I think that like when you the stuff that you're talking about, it's like it forces you to engage with things differently. And I think that like whether it's reading or TV, like we're living in a period of time where how we interact with these things is so, it's changed so dramatically and so quickly and so completely that again, going back to like, and again, like, I'm not sure if this is just me being an old man raging against the chain, the winds of change, the times, you know, the times they are a changing, but like, it really does feel like the end. Like it's the, like we've already reached what I would consider to be a post reading, post literate generation. Nobody reads books. People can still read, like they can read a street sign, or they can read ingredients. Like, but like
consciously consuming literature,
or like, is it even going to be
engaging with literature?
It's going to be so much less common.
Yeah,
that people would, in the case of what we're talking about, so purely engage with the music from a movie when you don't have any other ways of having it come into your soul, right? Like, is that part of the John Williams mystique? Like, the part of the mythos behind it is that no one's ever going to be making music into that context anymore.
Yeah.
And so people aren't going to, right? Like, even, like, people have talked about, like, how, like, you know, like, in the past, like, I remember, like, sometimes I'll get in the car with my kids in the past, and, like, they would just keep, they'd put a song on and listen to the first 40 seconds and then skip to the next one. And I'm like, you didn't used to be able to do that.
Not until the CD
could you just skip a track. Like, if you were on, you had to fast forward.
Cassettes didn't have, like, maybe some of the advanced ones had, like, you could tell when tracks would stop.
You would have to fast forward and then play to see if you got to the end.
Or
sometimes you could hear it, like, going, and then would quiet, and then you go, okay, that's the end. But, like, you were forced to engage. Like, if you put an album on...
You can't do that with a record, really. Like,
I mean, you could. You have to get up, take the thing, look on the thing, find the next song, drop it.
Okay, it does, like, kind of mark, like, where tracks
are. It does. Okay. But, like, that...
That's called tracks, because it's, like, literally just, like, you gotta, like, let the tracks run out.
You would have to... You'd drop the needle, and it would run all the way through in. And then if it was done, it would go, whoop, go back to the beginning, whoop, play it. And... like, even that, like, now, like, you just skip.
Yeah.
You just click a button and you're on the next song. And I don't think people...
Or you just build a playlist, right? Like, you don't even listen to an album as an album. You just, like, extract the tracks you like and make a giant mix of songs you like. Which is fine, too.
Which you
like,
couldn't do on vinyl at all.
Right, yeah.
It wasn't until cassette tapes that you actually had mixtapes.
Yeah.
Because people would use one tape... play the music and record it on the other tape.
Yeah, or off the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I just think that there's something very... It isn't just that John Williams is getting old and he's going to die and then he's not going to make music anymore, but that the context in which he started and did most of his work is gone.
Yeah.
It's over.
Let's end on a happy note. What is everyone's favorite either album of the 1 through 9 Star Wars soundtracks? Like, favorite soundtrack?
Ugh.
Or, like, favorite, like, top track or two of any of them? Like, go-to, like, banger of a track. Like, what's the S-tier tracks or, like, themes, right, of any of the 9? But let's start with overall. Start with overall. Like, which movie has the best soundtrack in your mind?
Of the just Star Wars?
1 through 9, yeah.
Oh, okay. I've been playing around with this for a very long time. So, if I could go... I've actually even made my 1 through 9 for the top 10 list for this. So, at number 9 is Rise of Skywalker, obviously. It has good moments, but it is felt mostly on repeat.
Yeah, I can't think of any unique themes from it, right?
Outside of Rise of Skywalker and the Anthem of Evil, which was supposed to be Palpatine's new evil theme, which they only played 2 times in that. Then they kind of resorted back to the... So, like, his normal theme. At 8... Attack of the Clones.
Oh, come on.
outside outside of
Anakin and Padme's love theme, come on.
Across the Stars, is probably the best thing to come out of the album.
For sure.
I did. And the Imperial March rendition that they do at the end always will give me chills no matter what.
The quiet one.
Yeah.
At the very end.
Like
when they're watching the,
like
the
like mutes out almost, or like it like whispers out at the end of like the 10-minute like finale medley.
There's they play that when they're watching the clones.
Right.
And
he
does that little fist thing where he's like,
oh, what have we done? Yeah.
And it's like, and it's like, it's just like that little moment of like, this is where the Empire started.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, it does kind of mostly resort to very quiet music that doesn't really have anything until the arena. And even then, most of the arena material is from episode one. So
yeah, like the droids theme, the droid army theme.
Mm-hmm. So, at number seven would be the Last Jedi. So love the Rose theme, love the I really like that John Williams took more of a got to play a little bit more around with things. Theme wise, especially with Kylo Ren's theme in that one, but yeah, it could have been higher. It was almost close to beating Force Awakens in my opinion, but shy by a hair. But that leads to number six, which is The Force Awakens, which definitely reignited that spark that we got from Star Wars originally. I love Rey's theme. I think Kylo Ren's motif is fantastic. The March of the Resistance is a banger, and I was so happy to hear that at that May the 4th concert, which, by the way, little side distraction, there is going to be a Star Wars concert at the Grand Rapids Symphony Orchestra, May the 4th, next year in 2025. So
I'm in. I was gonna when you showed me that, I went on there. I was gonna buy a ticket.
You're right.
And it wasn't there.
So tickets are actually on sale right now.
Oh,
they weren't on sale last week.
No, but they actually are not. Actually, they did have like a little discount thing for Grand Rapids Comic Con, but you wouldn't know that unless you were actually there.
So can you still buy tickets, or is it sold out already?
Yeah, no, you can still buy tickets.
For May, that date?
It's only a one-time thing?
Yep, May the 4th.
What day of the week is that?
Sunday. So I'm going to buy my ticket, but hope I get that day off of work.
Is it like you can't ask for it off?
Not because... I could, but Japan.
Is it,
they did took most of my vacation days.
Is it like an evening or like an afternoon?
That I don't know. Want to say that it's a
it's probably,
evening.
It's, if it's evening, it's not super late. Sundays, Sundays in Grand Rapids are never usually late night things.
That sounds good.
Well, I didn't. Okay, so I'm gonna check because I will absolutely buy my ticket and I will get that day off and I will go.
There goes siren number two.
Force Awakens is where you left off, I think.
So, yeah. And, so that would be five, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so five, Revenge of the Sith. I kind of was... The films that I had debates over soundtrack-wise really heavily were Force Awakens versus Revenge of the Sith. I think Revenge of the Sith beats it out by having more original compositions in it than before. The Battle of the Heroes, monumentous. The Battle over Coruscant, which I wish they extended in the original soundtrack release, but didn't. But there are versions out there that are film, that are like straight from the film that I usually tend to listen to anyway. The Order 66 scene was very emotional.
Mm.
Like Anakin's dark deeds.
Yeah.
It's a good... Yeah.
The music specifically from Order 66 when Obi-Wan is on Utapau.
Yeah.
And that tragic, mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Like, that still gives me, like, a deep, sad feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's actually playing literally, like, when he's falling into the water and then he's coming out and, like,
then they replay it when Obi-Wan confronts Anakin and Anakin chokes Padme.
So, yeah, that's some powerful stuff. Yeah.
So, then number four, The Phantom Menace.
Hmm.
Yep, I put The Phantom Menace pretty high on that list. Duel of the Fates.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Probably I think out of all the prequel trilogy material, Duel of the Fates is definitely that thing that will live on.
Oh, I would say that's, yeah, absolutely. And that is the track kind of the prequels.
It was definitely the new Imperial March for that era.
100%.
In my opinion.
I would agree.
The pod racing, any scenes on Naboo. Just so much nostalgia. And plus, I also have the ultimate version of it. So
yeah,
it's
the one
like
that's just
like,
the whole movie.
So it's basically like...
Why don't they have that for every single one of them?
They have that for Lord of the Rings. They have like the film score.
Mm-hmm. Like just played in real time.
Basically, yeah.
Yep.
Like
they did that with Phantom Menace, and then they never did it again.
Yeah. But they did do... it's starting to catch on again, though. They did do it for Solo, A Star Wars Story, and
that's the last one.
So hopefully it'll catch on.
Is that still something you can stream, like the Rogue One soundtrack playing in real time?
Yes, but when you get it, make sure that it's the expanded edition. So.
But is it something that's on Apple Music that I can just play?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those two actually recently.
Why are they doing those?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Which they actually did that for the original trilogy, but they
took it down.
They took it down because I think there was like some. I think Disney didn't have the rights to it.
How could they not?
Because
did like a record
was, like,
label have the rights?
I think it was owned by like Sony Music, whereas opposed to. Whatever they...
Or it had probably had something to do with Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Publishing it, maybe.
Hmm.
But it's some type of, like...
So Phantom Menace was 3 or 4?
That 4.
So then it's the original trilogy.
So, it kind of goes...
up there.
3, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
March of the Ewoks, still one of my favorite part.
Shout out to Yub Nub.
That's, yeah, old school...
That's John Williams too.
I know I'm gonna get hate for this. Number 2, Empire Strikes Back. Yes, I know it has the Imperial March. Yes, I know it has
it's the introduction.
Han and Leia's love theme. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know it has Yoda's theme. Yes, they're unbelievably good, but it for me it just fails. In comparison to the Oscar winner.
Yeah, right.
That is Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
Or just Star Wars, if you're...
Yes. The Star Wars.
The Star Wars.
The one that started it all.
Yeah.
It couldn't, like, just the first note kickstarts the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
After that, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And after that, it just takes you on an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, it has one of my favorite themes, which is the... Back then, it was Obi-Wan's theme.
Yeah.
But now we all associate it as...
Which was really interesting in the documentary that they almost didn't use Because didn't
yeah.
John Williams have a different...
Yes. Yeah, there was an alternate...
And then George Lucas said, I don't like that, do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And he did something else, and it was the Force theme.
So, yeah, I did know about the alternate binary track, which...
I think it was a major key, and then he changed it to, like, the minor version or whatever. Or
right.
Vice versa. Yeah.
But I think he was... But I felt like that's... The alternate one felt more deserty. Which Lucas, I think, was looking more for, like, a mm-hmm. hopeful thing. But, yeah, heck, the Force thing, what can I say about it? It, like, just every note where it lands, it is kind of, like, describing hope. You have ups, you have downs, and, but at the end, you get to the highest point.
Mm.
I'm starting to swell up. that theme has gotten me through so many autistic breakdowns.
Hmm.
And one of the first things that I popped in when I lost my dad, my grandma, just was that theme. It was like, okay.
Hmm.
They'll live on. And it is music from a movie, but it's been not only like a crutch in life to help me, but a cheer. In other words, like, I also look at it as a cheerleader in life as well. Like,
mm-hmm.
Telling me to keep going, telling me to get through things, even though I'm at the lowest point. I think that's something that John Williams tapped in.
Yeah.
Very
yes,
well,
right? I think that that's what I was getting at earlier was that. There's something so soulful about him. Like there's something that he's doing that transcends just the technical elements of music. And
he's the maestro. He's like a wizard. He can play with the elemental forces to like conjure something.
And I would say that like to tap into what you're saying, Justin, like part of the reason why that man and that music and that documentary and that is because it is more than just the soundtrack to a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It is the soundtrack, and I know this sounds almost cliche, but it is the soundtrack to our lives. Like
not just Star Wars, like literally his entire catalog is like the pop culture soundtrack of like it's the music to all the best movies we all grew up with, you know?
But on top of that, it does more
mm-hmm.
than just help us to relive the content that it was connected to. Like, I know for me,
mm-hmm.
for you, probably for you as well, Sean, like, it's where we go. Like,
yeah, it's comfort music.
Or yes, yeah. We go to that music. I remember going to the Star Wars soundtracks when my mom died. I remember going, like, times in my life where, like, life was really hard or challenging or frustrating or whatever, and those 15 minutes in the car with the Star Wars soundtrack on was what got me through the day. Like, that was how I recharged, where, like, all right, I can get to the next thing, right? Because I had that little time in my cocoon with, mm-hmm. with John Williams and my Star Wars memories, you know.
Emotional support music.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the reason why, like, I don't know, like, I might be more of an emotional wreck when John Williams mm-hmm. dies than even George Lucas or Steven Spielberg, for that matter. Like, I don't know. Like, but I think it's again, not for everyone, but for a lot of people, that's where the John Williams legacy lives. It lives in us in a way that is beyond just fandom or whatever.
Well, I mean, music, like literally resonates
yeah.
in our souls, right? It's older than visual storytelling, obviously.
Well, I think especially they even talked about that a little bit
like,
in the documentary, didn't they?
As old as a human hitting a stone.
Didn't he say something about that? Like, how he was always curious about, like, what is music? What is that?
Mm-hmm.
Why do these sounds
certain frequencies
create these types of experiences
right.
like
resonate and like evoke emotion, like the arrangement
because
of,
it's like a language, it's
yes,
like its own
right.
language,
yeah.
but it's not everybody understands it or can.
It's like something we kind of discover and kind of wield. It's like the force, like it's right. It's like it's this thing that exists that we like tap into and like utilize, but like we don't really own it.
It's primal.
It's because like every culture has tapped into this like music, as it were, right? Like music is like
the impact of
physical property,
the vibration of certain sounds
yeah.
on your interior reality.
Mm-hmm. And then the association of like certain notes or phrases with like. If you, like that's how he writes music. Like, oh, we need like a love theme. We need like a sad song. We need like a like bright, exciting. Like you can like evoke emotions out of the audience with the way that you arrange a score.
I'm gonna say one thing, then I'm gonna do my quick breakdown. One of the examples of that, like that, hit me so hard in that documentary was the little piece about the Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Music.
Yeah.
Oh.
And.
Okay.
How, number one, like just how, like, I know for me, like, it's almost impossible to hear that theme
mm-hmm.
without almost tearing up every time.
It's associated with the story and the entire, like, just the movie and what actually happened.
But, like, I can just hear the music,
mm-hmm.
and it somehow puts you in touch with the fullness of the human tragedy
mm-hmm.
of the Holocaust. Which for me, as the child of Jewish parents and of my father's side of the family, literally
mm-hmm.
fleeing from that and having people die in that historical context, like, but then it was like that description, that moment where they were interviewing Steven Spielberg and his wife,
mm-hmm.
and how she was describing like how they just walked into the room. And he played the music and they started crying. And they didn't even see the movie.
Right, yeah.
Like, he just played the music and they were just instantly in tears. Like, wow. Like, what? Who? Like, what? Like,
that's what I mean. Like, he tapped into something.
Yes.
And they're like, whoa, what do we got here? Like, you discover it. You don't, like, create it. It comes to you.
It is the
idea of, like, the muse, right? Your muse is, like, your inspiration for the music. Like, I don't know where this came from. Like, it just kind of came to me.
Well, it's like John Williams can go from a guy
mm-hmm.
sitting in a room with a blank piece of paper to consistently creating out of nothing the things that are instantly recognizable and resonate so deeply with us
mm-hmm.
on so many levels for so long. Like, that is like divine.
Right.
Like, it's like it's transcendent,
mm-hmm.
and it makes you feel like you have a connection with someone who you don't know.
Yeah,
like because it's like,
wow. Well, it's like his gift he shared with the world, and we're all better for it. And yeah, it will be said like when he dies, it's like oh, like I mean, it's not like he is still making stuff, and I think like the Obi-Wan Kenobi was like his last actual official Star Wars like theme that he kind of contributed. So he's like retired from Star Wars music or whatever, but like. I mean, and he's 92. It's like he's lived a full life.
Yeah, he's.
So it's not like he like, oh man, cut down on his prime. Like, it's so tragic. Like, we're not going to get more. Like, there's more coming. It's gone. It's like, it's going to be like, ah, like, end of an era. Like, oh man, like, what a life, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, yeah.
And I don't think any catalog of music will live longer.
Right.
Than that. I mean, I think that his catalog, especially as it relates to Star Wars, will live longer than the Beatles or anything, I think.
Mm-hmm. So what's your, like, favorite album or, like, your S-tier tracks?
That is such an impossible thing.
It took months for me.
It's
to get
an
there.
Impossible
like,
thing.
If you had to make like a 1-hour playlist of the Star Wars music, like what would have to be in there?
I mean, I think to go back to like what are my top overall soundtracks, I think that so much of it's really hard to not put the original trilogy in the top three because so much of what makes the rest of it good is tapping into some of the same themes. And like Rise of Skywalker is a great soundtrack, I think, but it's because it's mostly the original trilogy.
Right.
But I will say, I would say that, like, I think that if I evaluate it, if I try to take the personal experience out of it, like, I do think that I would put Empire Strikes Back at the top because it includes so much of what was in A New Hope, but then does so much original stuff that's so good on its own that I think Empire Strikes Back is, in that sense, would be number one for me. Because it still includes the opening theme, but then it includes the Imperial March. It includes Yoda's theme. It still has the Force theme. It has Han and Leia. Like, it is, to me, like, just like the New Hope to Empire Strikes Back, like, oh my gosh, you did it better the second time? Like, how the hell did you do that?
Yeah.
Like, you took the best movie of all time, the biggest box office hit, the biggest, most popular movie of all time, and then you did something better. And I feel like that is what happened with Empire Strikes Back. John Williams made the best soundtrack of all time, and he made it better. You're like, how did you do that? Like, but Empire Strikes Back as a soundtrack wouldn't be what it is without A New Hope. So I think that those two would be, you know, in my top two. But I would say Empire Strikes Back, New Hope, Return of the Jedi would be third for sure. I'd absolutely put, I think of all the other soundtracks, the only one that I could sneak into that top three would be The Phantom Menace. And I think it would be primarily because I think Duel of the Fates is probably my number two track of all nine movies. That is a absolutely, like, and the crazy thing about Duel of the Fates is it doesn't sound anything like anything else in the Star Wars. Like, it has vocals.
Yeah, and it's in Hindu or whatever.
It's like it's
Sanskrit or whatever.
It's like it's almost like, oh, that must have been the track that someone else did. Nope, yeah. John Williams did that too. Like, I think the rest of it, like, it's a wash. Like, there are hits and misses in all of the soundtracks. Attack of the Clones is probably lower for me just because there were things about that movie and about the soundtrack that didn't quite, but then at the same time, like, Across the Stars is, I think you could put that up against Han and Leia's theme. Like, it's that good. But that's all I would really have about that. But I would say, like, in terms of tracks, like, I don't know, I mean, how do you, you know, for me, it would be between, like, you know, whatever you want to call it, the opening theme, the closing theme, like, the main theme of Star Wars, like, dun, dun, like, that theme. I don't know how anything could be above it, just because I think that is so, like, because of where it sits in the grand scheme of your experience, right? It's like, there is nothing like watching A New Hope from the beginning and having that fanfare. And that, like, that is John Williams' Star Wars. Like, and then hearing that, he's like, the Star Wars thing coming on the screen, the opening crawl, the ship flying over, the way that music is played in that context, like, that's perfection. There isn't anything better, I don't think. Like, that is just collectively, like, and it's right from the jump. Like, oh, you want to see the first scene with the first track? With the, boom, like, it's all uphill from here, like, right? Like, it doesn't get any worse. Like, that is number one. I think that it would be almost a toss-up for me between the Imperial March and Duel of the Fates. I think that they're both so utterly listen, like, you can listen to it over and over and over and over and over, and it doesn't get old, and it is so powerful and such a strong pieces of music. And Duel of the Fates in particular, I think, is without question in my mind, like, the top track of the prequel sequel era. And sits with other things in the Phantom Menace, I think, that are very nostalgic and very, you know, and it could be, I think I noticed a trend, like even with your list, like I feel like the first movies of each trilogy tend to have the biggest impact with the soundtracks. Like, like New Hope, Phantom Menace, Force Awakens. Cause like, I mean, for me, there's no question the Force Awakens is the best soundtrack of the sequels. And I would even probably put it ahead of Phantom. I would put it ahead of Attack of the Clones and even Revenge of the Sith. Like, I think that The Force Awakens was, it's great. Like, it's a great soundtrack. And it had less support, I think, maybe than any, like, it to me, that was like, it was like, damn, if this guy didn't do it again.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we need you to make an original new Star Wars soundtrack, and we need it to be iconic. And he's like, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wait, what? You did it again? Rey's theme, the X-Wing theme, the Kylo Ren theme. Like, they're never going to reach the level of, like, the original trilogy for me. But, like, those are pretty damn good. Rey's theme being probably, like, oh, just amazing. Like, I could, yeah, that would be my take on it.
I think Empire Strikes Back is probably my favorite because the reasons you said, like, it builds on what's in the original. But, like, Star Wars is the close second. But then I put Attack of the Clones third.
From my third.
Own, it's my own nostalgia, but, like, I would say it does have Duel of Fates in it. The part when, like, Anakin, like, he's, like, on the speeder bike. Like, they have that, they run the motif. It's, like, a shortened version of it, but, like, it's in that soundtrack.
Oh,
and then the Darth Vader theme is also in it, like, at the end. But, like, it has, like, the whole, like, speeder chase, like, through Coruscant. Like, that 10-minute song is really great. Like, it has an electric guitar solo in it, right? Have you ever heard that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, like, you can't really hear it in the movie, but, like, you hear it in the soundtrack. And then, yeah, Across the Universe.
Across the stars, yeah.
And then, I love the whole, like, arena battle. Like, dun, 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 dun. That, like, whole theme, like, the whole sequence of that. And then, like, I love, but actually, my favorite tracks of any Star Wars album, honestly, is, like, the... Like, whatever, like, the last track is. So it's, like the lead up into, like, the...
finale.
Dun, 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 and then it has, like, a medley of all the songs going after it. And it's, like, this, like... It's, like, an afterglow, like, endorphins.
Right.
Kind of feel. Because, like, the blue text directed by George Lucas. It's, like, you're just, like, ah.
Yeah.
Like, you know? And, like, just, like, let the music just, like, let's review the music we just went through. Like, yeah, 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 oh, yeah. Like, it takes you through the whole journey of the movie, like, through the song. And, like, those are always, like, my favorite tracks is, like, the end bangers, right? Because it recaps all the themes that you just heard. Because, like, it's, like, a reverse overture. Like,
so you're saying, things. Like, that transition in Attack of the Clones is your favorite?
Probably. I don't know. It's, like, it's hard because it's, like, that's the one I just listened to, like, nonstop for, like...
That's the one that goes from the wedding scene...
Yeah,
to the finale.
But, well, it has that plus like the all the troops like lining up like the Clone Wars marching,
right.
Like Darth Vader theme coming on.
Yeah.
And then it like does like Dooku's kind of theme in there and like and then it does like Across the Stars again, like a medley of that and like it just like does all of those tracks prior. But yeah, there is like the part where like all like the Anakin, the non Across the Stars like Anakin and Padme like love story stuff like is in there too where it's like not like very Star Wars-y, I guess you could say, but I don't know. It just has like I put it up. It's high up. That's the one I always go back to, right?
Yeah.
And same with the movie too, honestly. I put episode 2 way higher in my list of movies
than most people.
Like, that's just my, I don't know, man. Like, I love it.
But that speaks to how we all like right, like you interacted with Attack of the Clones at a very different time than in life than I did.
I was a perfect age.
Yeah.
15.
And like I love that. That's
love
like
with Padme wanted to be Anakin. Wanted to be with Padme, right?
Yeah,
Obi-Wan was cool. Jango Fett's awesome. Like I wasn't too old to be like this is stupid, but I wasn't so young to be like traumatized by like I wasn't like Boba Fett's age. Where like, oh man, his head got cut off. I was like, yeah, like you know, like Jedi versus Boba Fett.
Wait, how old were you when Attack of the Clones came out?
15.
Oh okay.
Yeah,
right.
I was 9.
Yeah,
I was 15.
See,
but I was like basically Anakin's age, like for. Phantom Menace, like I basically was Anakin's age,
as it came out.
It's like he was like 9 and I was like 12 in Phantom Menace.
Right.
But then like he was a little bit older than me in Attack of the Clones, like 19. I'm 15. Like
in real time.
Like, I have a shot with Padme, right? Like, whatever, you know, like when you're 15, like I'm gonna shoot my shot, right, and like get her, and then But this before that, before like Attack of the Clones, or before Revenge of the Sith, when you're like,
yeah,
you know, this is like, we're like, this could go either way. Like, what is the Clone Wars? We don't really know. Like, the show hadn't come out. Like, that was like, that era was like ripe with, that was like a high point to me of like Star Wars. Like, man, like, we're going to the Clone Wars. Like, what's the final movie going to be like? Like,
right.
I know we're going to Darth Vader somehow, but like, how's it going to turn out? Like, don't know, don't know. And it's like hard to remember like the time before Revenge of the Sith was like a thing.
Right.
Right?
Like, yep.
Like the summer of 2003, where I was like, what's going to happen next, right? After it's been a year since Attack of the Clones, like, what's coming next? They didn't have, they had the old, the original Clone Wars, like, but like, they didn't, like, because all the Clone Wars stuff was after Revenge of the Sith movie came out, then like that movie,
yeah,
like, in 2008 or whatever, and then the show, like, and I missed all that, so it's like, that was like peak Star Wars to me, was Attack of the Clones.
See, that's what I, that's what I love. I love that, that is what,
and
that is
the giant,
what,
battle at the end, like the clones versus the robots, like at the end, like that's a full on Star Wars, like there's your wars, like this is like a giant land battle with like
that
dust
is,
and like lasers everywhere, like,
this is
yeah.
an example of why Star Wars, this is why like I think it's so important to not get too riled up about your opinions,
right?
Because,
and I love like acrobatic Yoda. Like everyone was like, ugh, and I was like, yes, this is awesome. Like Yoda, look what he can do. Like he's been holding out on us.
See, I was like, I was more like the old person going, well, that's.
But then he like, but then afterwards he's like, oh, like he like used up all his energy for this fight,
right.
And then he's like, ugh, and I'm like, yeah, like I was all on that, all aboard that, all trains of four.
I just loved the poster with him, like where he's giant and everybody else is small.
The IMAX poster.
Yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that was good.
So track.
Yeah, I mean, just I think Cross the Stars is up there. Yoda's theme is probably in the top three for me. Like Yoda's theme, the Binary Sunset, of course.
Yeah.
I like the full version of the Cantina theme.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's just fun. Like yeah. I had it as a ringtone for a long time, right?
Yeah.
What's crazy is that
even as
we're talking about all of this Star Wars stuff, it is so easy to forget, like Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark,
Jurassic Park,
Harry Potter, Jurassic Park,
yeah.
Superman, mm-hmm. like almost.
ET.
I mean, like yes.
You can see E.T.
like,
all over Empire Strikes Back. You can, like, is this the same era? Like, you can see E.T. and Empire. They're, like, twin albums because it's all the same time period.
So I haven't listened to E.T. enough.
Yeah. Like,
but
the Yoda theme is basically a variant of E.T.'s, like, theme, whatever.
Actually,
vice versa.
That's something that I did not catch in the documentary. That, like, I didn't catch the first time I watched E.T. is that they do play Yoda's theme.
Basically, yeah.
When they showed like the Halloween scene where there's like somebody kid in a Yoda costume,
Yoda, yeah,
right.
And then you hear da, 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 da. It's like,
mm-hmm.
But here's one of the most magical moments in the documentary that I think summarizes like the genius of him in his entirety is when he was talking about coming up with the Jaws theme, and like literally John Williams. The first truly like transcendent, recognizable piece of music that he ever did that is instantly recognizable is Two Notes. Like how does someone just find the Two Notes?
Well, it's from Dvorak's New World Symphony, ironically enough. Like literally listen to movement 4 of Dvorak's New World Symphony.
But is that in there by itself?
Yes, that's how it starts.
But it ascends, Jaws
it's literally the same two notes and the same it's the same like he just like
Jaws is literally all you have to do is nothing else. That you instantly know what that is. But they're just two random notes. In any other context you would just hear two notes, like it would just like, and yet he takes those two notes, connects it to the movie,
to a primal fear of like what lurks beneath the waters, right?
and creates instantly iconic music that you
because they showed that
you never
like,
forget
scenes from Jaws like either without music and then like with the wrong music and then with the final music you're like oh there you go right it like makes the movie right.
I mean I literally think that that music if you watch mm-hmm. the opening sequence of Jaws with that music it is impossible for you to jump into deep water.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, I'm gonna figure out this every time I get in water, and then
I think it created literally, like, yeah. I think everybody who jumps in the deep ocean hears that in their head.
Right? Yeah. Jump in. All right. That was music by John Williams, mostly, in Star Wars. So we will catch you next time on the Trench Run Report for perhaps
probably
Skeleton Crew or
mm-hmm.
something else. But until next time, the Force will be with you.
Always.
Great shot, kid. That was one in a million.